Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, well, notice post covering finance and property news. Now, this is a Monday evening rant, except it's on a Tuesday with Edwin. Hi, Edwin. Due to local circumstances, huh?
Well, what I can say to our audience is I've defrosted and I was able to make tonight's rant as opposed to yesterday's rant, having been caught out and almost going into hypothermia after two and a half hours.
Yeah, so that's why we couldn't get live. You got locked out because of a key problem, and by the time you got back in, it was too late to record last night. Anyway, look, we're doing it tonight, and actually it's quite good timing because tonight, a bit later this evening, I've got my live show, and in fact, that is titled Australian Property Biggest Fall in 40 Years with Leif Van Onselen. And that really segues rather nicely into your poll, Edwin, which when is a crash not a crash? Yeah, how do we define a crash, right?
Well, that's right. That's what we're all into the property game for, right? what's the highs and what's the lows? And get out your popcorn at the moment. Get out the popcorn and butter it up because, we want to ask the question, what is a crash? Is it a 5% downturn or is that just a correction? Is it a 10% decline or 20% decline plus, throwing some mortgagee in possession sales? Or is it just a huge increase in mortgage sales? So put it out. Look, it got just under 3,000 views. The good thing is a lot of these polls, unless you've got tens of thousands of followers on your X account, but the engagement was rather interesting. It's one of the better polls I've ran in years. It's got 124, but I think the majority would agree that it's 20% in mortgagee sales, and that's that would be my first question to you, Martin, is what do you see as the figure? Or what do you see as the magic number or the point where you could go from a correction to a crash?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Edwin, because to my mind, if I look back in history, there have been examples in the UK and in the US where prices have come down more than 30%. And I would have suggested to you that a crash is probably more than 20. It's probably closer to 30 or more, right? I think a correction is somewhere between 10 and 20%, especially, of course, because prices have run up dramatically in the last couple of years. So they were very, very bubbly. And the other way to look at it, if you look at it in terms of what it would take to get incomes and properties back in some sort of balance, well, that would need to be about 40%. So I don't know what you think, but I think 30 to 40% is a crash. Anything less than that, it's a correction or it's a slight blip. But, if you look at all of the stupidity on the media, right, they've all come out with these massive stories about prices crashing, prices falling. It's terrible, terrible. Never see anything like it. And I'm thinking, yeah. This is all about clicks, and and just here's a couple of examples. Sydney home prices sink back to 2021 levels, or this one, crash warning, as $150,000 wiped off home values. This is on the Telegraph. Or one in three, alarming sign, Aussies are ditching property dream. I mean, let's get a sense of balance here, Edwin. What do you think of crashes?
I think a crash, as you said, you rightly say, it's first of all, it's got to be defined with time as well as with a percentage drop, and it's similar to what we basically saw or started to really see in New Zealand. And then we'll talk a little bit more later on in the rant as to what promoted or what has kept a lid on the price from jumping back up again. So I would say the crash, you start really feeling it in your mid-20s, because I think people are going to start panicking. What we're seeing, as I said, since we've started, looking at this sort of what's happening post budget, and the political spectrum, you what we've got is, in my opinion, is a lot of noise and a lot of emotion, and it's, you could say it's because of that you've got somewhat of a correction, in because a lot of it's led by emotion and led by noise. Because when you look at the fundamentals of what keeps property prices rise, in essence, it's your interest rates, your demand and supply, right? They're your biggest main factors to keep the prices bubbling. We're not getting rid of two of those. We're not eliminating two. You could say that rates are higher, and there's a lot of stress, but stress doesn't necessarily convert into mortgagee sales. It just means a lot of families deal with a lot do with without a lot of things that they would otherwise be have, like private schooling, two cars in the garage, and the list goes on. And we've talked about these sort of these corrections in the past. I really believe that in 2019 we were about to go off the cliff then. And I'd say again, it was in many businesses were going to go off the cliff that fall. Because of my involvement in the industry, I could see the pain that a lot of other people don't see. In 2019, for me, was really I could really see a drop of anywhere between 20 to 30% drops, and the mortgagee sales were the voluntary mortgagee sales, you could say, or the what would you call it? Self-listing type of pressure sales. We're going to come on in droves. But for the lockdowns, it really saved the whole economy, the whole economic outlay of Australia. It really the landscape, because of the amount of money that the government threw during that period. Now, as you said, as you rightly said, between from 2021 till now, look, Martin, I can tell you that I can name quite a number of suburbs that we've seen, we've experienced, and my family have experienced 110, 120% capital growth in their investment portfolios by buying one or two properties in certain areas, certain parts of Sydney, outside of other areas. I'm just talking Sydney region, right? Now, from 20 in before the so last year when the 5% the support guarantee, whatever you want to call it, the government subsidised the other, or are on the hook for the other 15%, the 5% scheme, deposit scheme, that again we saw and we documented and we shared how on the ground, live at grassroots levels, we saw properties go up from 950,000, in like properties, to be selling 3 months later for 1.3, and now the entry level is 1.3 to 1.35, in certain LGAs of Sydney, and or certain suburbs of Sydney. And to go back, even from that position, to go back 10%. Again, it's really a correction. But when you start using the percentages across the broad spectrum and across all properties as a broad, then you've got a mixture of some areas that have got, and some types of properties that have gone back, potentially 30, 40%. You've got others that have gone back, 2, 3% perhaps, others that are stagnant, and others that are still going up in value. But when you're painting it with a broad brush, the whole property landscape and the property arena, as the mainstream do. I say this is why I go back to my position of if we really genuinely have that 10%, because 10% to me is really closer to the your 20-25 in most most markets that just average it out. But when you bring it back to having a 20 plus percent drop, and then you start getting a lot more panic and a lot more stress and a lot more properties on the market, that's when you start really really feeling it. And then that's why I say that then the economy is in a lot of shit because of the other factors that are involved that are tied up with the property landscape, the property arena, which is your international education, construction, and all the people that have borrowed on the equity of the properties in order to set up businesses. So there's your problem. So yeah, if we really get into that arena of a crash, we're talking mid-20s to 30. I mean, we're in a lot of trouble. We will be in a lot of trouble, but I don't believe we're going to get past or even as close. If you're relying in general terms with your prop track info, your CoreLogic info, whatever info in terms of the mainstream as to what's going, what they're annualizing, or giving you the quarter feedbacks. For me, anything between that 5 and 10 is really a market correction, based on what the sentiment is at the time. But I'm still of the opinion that this correction, and this hiccup is will settle, will be played down sooner than later, and it may take 3 to 6 months, could be closer to the 6 months, but unless we really ramp up the construction side of things, that the supply side of things, we're not catching up with the demand. If anything, we've made supply a lot harder to reach the targets that the government or anybody would have, or those that are in need of a dwelling would want to see.
Yeah, I think the supply side is definitely an issue. Of course, migration is still relatively high, so there's still some demand there. And of course, if people actually stop buying for a period of time, that creates a pent-up demand for later. So all of those factors are in the mix. But it is interesting, this Resolve poll is quite fascinating. Support for lower house prices. This is a survey that they did. How many housing people thinking about housing would support lower house prices? How many are undecided and how many oppose? And it's really interesting that there's quite a small proportion. It varies by income, it varies by property ownership and age, but there's a relatively small proportion who have people total support, right, for that end of the spectrum, right? Total support, pretty strong. Total oppose, pretty weak. And I think that's quite an interesting observation. There are a lot of people out there, Edwin, who are actually believing that really things have got out of hand. Prices are way too high relative to income, and I quite often get in my surveys, well, my kids will never get a property because it's just too expensive to get in. And so there is, I think, an acceptance that we need a little bit of a correction. We need a little bit of adjustment to prices over time. And then it begs the question, well, how much of a correction do you want?
Do you want
Over what period of time? And are you prepared to see your property go down in value, or is it somebody else's problem, right? I think that's the where it gets really interesting, because I have to tell you that in my surveys, when you ask people about their particular property, the proportion who actually are willing and able to accept a fall in their value is a hell of a lot smaller than this Resolve survey would suggest.
Yeah, look, we'll have our wish list, right? I mean, many of my colleagues would wish that Bitcoin went to 500,000, and many other things. And we you could also say, Martin, that I support people that are on full plant-based diets. I support them. But it doesn't mean that that I like to eat tofu. It doesn't mean that I'll eat the tofu or that I'd prefer tofu over a Wagyu steak, does it? So we can say one thing, but when it comes to the crunch, as you said, if you ask the right, if you ask the question, right, okay, how much are you prepared to lose in terms of value of your property to allow your child to enter the market? That's a different that would be a different kettle of fish, particularly if that was going to be a determining factor. Whilst we've got pie in the sky shit, whilst we've got ideas, ideologies, it's just pie in the sky. No, I don't believe that people in general want to lose. I could be wrong. Our viewers could correct me, but I don't believe that people want to lose in order to let others get into the arena. Or, perhaps what they're really wanting is a slowdown in value. But we go back to supply and demand. We go back to the principles of constraint. How do you curb demand, and how do you how can we increase supply? But if we're not going to be touching on those points, that is why I gave my simple premise that nobody's going to crash the property market presently. The one that's going to potentially crash the property market is the redhead, because that is where you're basically coming in with a sledgehammer. Presently, that is under our understanding of what to do. So this is why I go back in a serious note and say, do people really understand what they're asking for? Listen, I'm all for it, and I'll be up front. Reading more and more as to what they want to put forth, what Nation wants to put forward, and what they're starting to articulate. It makes a lot of sense, but when it comes down to will you. When the real quit is going to be, and people are going to wake up to the fact that if we go down this road, look at the kerfuffle that's been created at the moment. Look at the emotion at the moment, and they haven't allowed the penny to drop yet, or they haven't allowed the dust to settle. And look at the emotion, and look what's happened to the property arena and the property markets. And it's not that people have stopped buying. Right, and we see it on the open for inspections. We see what properties get attract a lot of viewers, what properties don't. I mean, look, I was at an open for inspection, and I'd stayed there the full hour at the open for inspection in the Blacktown LGA, and they had 14 groups through the property. And out of those 14 groups, you can't tell me that they were your neighbours listening to the conversations and what any also talking further with the agent. There were eight of those were serious. We're in the market to buy. It's just at what point do they enter the market is the question. So, but yeah, a lot of things come to play. So this is when everybody, as I said, everybody wishes for world peace. Everybody wishes for crypto to be up to 500,000, and for your mother-in-law to relocate to the Antarctic or something. But but that's wishful thinking, right?
Well, that's right. And I always say, do turkeys vote for Christmas, right? It's a bit like that. I actually think that people have this sort of disconnect between that philosophical point about, yes, we need affordability to be adjusted. But when it comes to your property and your situation, maybe there's a different take. Now, it's worth, I think, just going on from there, because, of course, it also depends on policy. And we've had a few policies, the latest changes to CGT and negative gearing, which are bubbling through now. And it's interesting that, according to what's happened over the last few hours, Albanese has actually effectively got an agreement with the Greens to pass the tax reforms. In so doing, they did actually now say that you can't borrow within the superannuation fund to purchase property. So that's a new thing that the Greens managed to trade. They traded it for a longer inquiry into the NDIS, which is an interesting little bit of horse trading. And of course, the Greens were all about, we're trying to help the property situation, et cetera, et cetera. And Labour was saying, well, this is true tax reform. I'm afraid that it's a very, very small change. It's a very small proportion at the moment. But I think it does show you, Edwin, that there's a little bit of a question in my mind about what's the cumulative effect of all these things that are bubbling through. To my mind, the most critical question is interest rates, right? I do think the tax reforms are there and it's going to have a bit of an impact and nobody quite knows. But actually, the trajectory of interest rates is really interesting. And there's a big debate going on at the moment. The RBA came out very recently and said, well, we may have to actually do a little bit more heavy lifting here if, in fact, inflation expectations continue to bubble higher. But a lot of the bank economists have turned turtle in the last 2 weeks and say, no more rate rises. Now, I've got this theory that they're a bit talking their own book. Because when you look at what we probably are going to see with the next inflation data, which is coming out soon, I expect to see more pressure on prices. But the most critical indicator for me are the forward indications of inflation expectations from those other surveys. They're very high at the moment. And the RBA keeps saying it's not the first round immediate impact, oil, et cetera, et cetera. It's the transference of those costs to a broader basket of prices, and very importantly, the inflation expectations. Inflation expectations are still extended. I think it's quite likely the RBA is going to have to do more. So to my mind, if you want to get a bit of a sense of where this might go, you still need to look at where the interest rate story is rather than the tax reform story.
Yeah, but okay, on the other side of that argument is the fact that if we're going to have more hikes, and I don't, you know, we outside of the political influence that we know the RBA are under, and outside of the the banking influence that they're also under, outside of that, we're still making it a lot costlier to build. So it goes back, you can't just sort of dial this one down and dial this one up and do that. What we're going to end up, what we're looking at, what we have been moving more and more towards, and I can see it more over the last 18 months, and I can see it more clearly now, is that we're creating exclusive pockets, if I could use exclusive areas where it doesn't matter what happens. Like my old, if you recall our early rants from back in 2019 and even beyond, beforehand, when I say in order to buy into have a field of five doc, you've either got to be part of the mafia, Italian, or to inherit a property there, or you've got to have $5 million. One of the three. So, and I think that this is what we're sort of moving towards, but in a more broader sense. It's not just becoming areas, aren't just becoming demographically driven in which demand prices. I mean, like we go also my examples there was also like Cabramatta. Once age Cabramatta, I mean, you wouldn't tell your friends you lived anywhere near close to Cabramatta, and you could buy one of those old fibro, return serviceman's cottages on a quarter acre block, for $150,000. Now try to pick one up for less than 1.5, with the same shack, because of the values and because of the demand of that particular demographic in that area, your Cabramatta's, your Kingly Vales, those sort of things. Again, so but now we're going to be, it's going to even get deeper into that. Is it's going to be the type of property and the quality of property. So we're becoming very, very broken or segmented. So in the markets that we knew as in areas or smaller areas, now it's becoming more and more broader, because if we're not going to be building as much, or if building is going to be very costly. I mean, the last thing you want to do is contract yourself to or take on a contract to buy a block of land and build a house. Let's say let's round it off to 1.5 million. And in the back of your mind, you're thinking, shit, by the time I paid my 1.5 million, by the time I finish, but based on the current stories, it's going to be worth 1.35. I mean, you're not going to do that, right? You're not going to. Hence the reason why now we've got the similar situations with your development project that the government can't get started, and we broke that. We opened that up. We opened that whole discussion just over 2 years ago. When I said, Martin, on the show, we broke that, and nobody's really picked that up. Only recently they're sort of starting to toy with the idea, the fact that the government have to basically put their hands in their pockets, which is taxpayers' money, to fund the projects, otherwise they won't build. And then you've got private institutions obviously building the build to rent stuff, whether it's co-living, whatever you want to call it. Nobody else, because you can't build. It's unaffordable to build unless you build very, very exclusive property. And in order to build very exclusive property, you have to be in higher end suburbs, markets, in order for them to absorb the properties that you are going to build. Currently, at the moment, one of my colleagues and myself, that deal with development sites and look for development sites for for builders, developers. We're struggling to put together a boutique development in your five dock Haberfield area, because the landowners want a certain price, but when you do the mathematics based on construction, right, on the construction costs and the resale values, you're not going to get that. You're going to do your ass, and that's why I said 5 6 weeks ago, I said on the show that you've got to picture an imaginary line going through Strathfield and Burwood. To the eastern side of that imaginary line, you may be able to sell the developments. To the western side of that imaginary line, you'll do your ass real quickly, because nobody's going to effectively pay 15 to 18 to $20,000 per square meter on a finished product. And the proof's in the pudding, because of current developments in your five dock Haberfield area. They're struggling to sell the finished apartments, again, also in boutique type of developments, for that were originally advertised for 1.8, but talking to the agents, the offers are coming in between 1.5 and 1.6. At 1.5, the developer is broke. At 1.6, he just it's a learning experience, or it's just lost time. But this is the conundrum that we are facing. Today I was talking to an agent in the Blacktown LGA, and I said, how much is a block of land worth in this particular suburb? He goes, oh look, they used to be worth 1.1 million, but now you could probably get paid not 900,000 for it. So this is a 600 square meter block of land, 600,000. And I said, well, how much? Why are you struggling to sell a home there for 1.5 million, for a five bedroom house with a pool and that? Oh, it's just people just want to bargain hunt and this, that, the other. And I said, well, look, have you thought of it this way? If that block didn't have a residence on it, right, and you bought it for 900 on the cheap, and you were to build the same structure, you're not going to get much change out of 1.8 million, Martin. So these are the anomalies that are going to be playing out. Hence the reason why there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of chatter about the fact that people are going to be paying, from the rental side of things, they're going to be paying a lot of money for rent moving forward in the future, if the supply continues not to keep up with the demand. And this is what Shane Oliver is basically putting out there as well, in his post on X, and saying, I mean, we've dropped, we've gone back almost 17%, month on month from May last year to now, or month on month. So it's, and if that is consistent, which I would say if the RBA hikes, it's only going to get worse because construction isn't going to get any cheaper. And if construction gets a lot more expensive, well then you've got an affordability crisis. You've got higher prices as well. Like it's really messed up. The key thing here is that take a deep breath and take a chill pill, as you say, Martin. Take a deep breath and really work out what you want. And the key is obviously to always buy with that upside.
Yeah, and I think buying with an upside is dead right, although sometimes it's quite hard, particularly when values are sliding. But I also am observing people are trying to find alternatives. And, tiny homes, granny flats, portable properties, and those sorts of things. Now, it's quite interesting because there was this little story, which of course says, buyer beware, right? So this is a Sunshine Coast couple trying to build a secure home. Being left with an empty block and unanswered questions. They're among more than 100 customers swept up in the collapse of a Brisbane-based tiny home company. And if you go and look through that a little bit further, there's a bit of a broader story here. Do you want to be the first to test a new method of building? Have you actually figured out whether it makes any economic sense or not? Is it something which can survive? I mean, there's a bunch of questions, Edwin, which you've got to start thinking about, right?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, Martin. We go back to the initial point. Yes, it is very hard to buy something with an upside or when the perception is that the market that the prices are going down. Hence the reason why you've always got to be you've all you've got to come in with an open mind, and you've got there's all different value points, and there's all different upsides, whether it's emotional, whether it's area, whether it's a conversion from a three to a four better, whether it's there's all different upsides that you've got to assess. And hence the reason why I've got a job, and the team, the rest of the team, Dusty and Evan, and the rest of the team, we've got a job. But when we go back to from a an alternative to what people are really looking at, because these are just alternatives, right? We find two things. One is they're a lot smaller, and in essence, they are a lot costlier, right? Because if you start comparing apples with apples, they're a lot costlier because you're getting a lot less bang for your buck. 2 years ago, you could get I could commission a granny flat for $150,000, and that'll be a brick veneer style granny flat, around the 50 square meters, 52, 50, 52 square meters, roomy, good appliances. Now, you wouldn't get much change out of 250,000. And that's how far we've gone, and that's and the I can guarantee you that the footprint's gotten a lot smaller as well, and you've got to step down in your inclusions in the way it's built, right? Because everything's just become a lot more costlier. So when you start looking at these alternatives, it's really buyer beware. It's hundreds of people that got shafted by this tiny homes mob over in Queensland, from my readings of the articles and all that fanfare that was being put out, and it's all to solve that affordability issue, to solve that rental issue that we're going through across Australia, right? That people are facing across Australia. Now we've got all this noise and fanfare, and the government talking about mints, talking about us helping to set up prefabricated dwellings. I mean, back in my day, I don't know about you, Martin, but these prefabricated dwellings that they're talking about, they were the tool sheds. That were the site sheds that now they're saying, what a great thing to have. Pardon me. So they're the side sheds that are just being tricked up a little bit more. That's all they are. But yet, it's still going to cost you a hell of a lot of money to put them in. They're not cheap. So you've got the issues of material size and that. Now, when you start talking about now with this prefabricated developments, high rise, you could high rise developments where you're talking about 528 co-living dwellings, or as we know it as student accommodation, purpose built for student accommodation pods, and tiny as in Macquarie Park. And I mean, and they're already creating this fanfare to say this is the solution to affordable. Is it really? Is it really? All it is, and now they've also changed the name because you don't hear them calling them student accommodation anymore. Now we've got a new sassy word. It's it's co-living, co-living. But co-living doesn't really solve the issues that young families, young people are facing post post. So what do you do post? You can put up with living in a pod in the sky. This is you're literally a dog box in the sky, whilst you're studying, because there will be a certain criterion. You put up with all the noise. You put up with all the all the issues in a co-living environment, and that, and they'll just over time. I just feel that they'll just become ghettos. But there's no way that you're going to be able to have a bring up a small family there. So this is, but yet. The painting the picture as though these modular units or prefabricated units from China and also setting up a factory here to start putting together expanding on those, I said, on your site sheds to and call that a win for the for the government for dealing with affordable the affordable living crisis that we're going through, whether it be ownership of a property or a home or a or having a rent or having a roof overhead, it's really nowhere near the mark. But this is where we are. So this is why I said earlier on is we're really going to be we're creating all sorts of new markets, all sorts of different markets within markets and preferred options because we're not really building what young families are looking for and have always been asking for in terms of for peaceful enjoyment of the future life as a family.
No, it doesn't solve the housing crisis, really. It may look good on paper. It may sound good from an announceable's point of view, and they can count the units being built. But it doesn't solve the underlying issue. I think that's the critical point. And I get quite frustrated with some of these because when you go back and talk to people about what they're really looking for, what their desired solution is, it's not these dog boxes in the sky. For all the reasons. And by the way, if you do the math on what it really costs and you do it on a square meter basis, because they're a lot smaller, it may sound cheaper, but actually when you do it, it's not really. And you've still got all the same issues of poor quality construction, lack of compliance, imported products with dodgy history. I mean, there's a bunch of questions there. This is not solving the housing crisis, Edwin, is it? And I think that's a really important point. Now, if we take the conversations one step further, because there's another very important hidden story. Nobody wants to talk about this other than, well, we talk about it. The truth is that in the rental sector, rents are still going up. And I keep seeing this in my surveys. The latest surveys are showing 74% of those in the rental sector across the country have cash flow pressures. And this one from the ABC brought the point home. Rental prices in Western Australia have gone up 66% in 5 years, the biggest increase in the nation, according to the latest data from Catality. I mean, they're up everywhere, but WA is a particular problem. A big migration, of course, into WA, according to the latest statistics. But you've got another issue which is on the back of this, and this is the issue that I think, again, is the real sleeper. There are lots of people caught in the rental sector with huge issues with regard to the legal processes required perhaps because the landlord is not doing what they should be doing, or perhaps the landlord is trying to get somebody out, or whatever it is. The legal processes are completely broken. And, you know, you put this post out, and I think it's worth thinking about it. There's a process called NCAT. NCAT blown out to months. And in many cases, tenants are milking the system. In other cases, of course, it's perhaps a question they're caught in the system. It's horrendous. And this is the thing that nobody wants to talk about. This set of legal processes are completely broken.
A lot of the changes the policy changes, the government policy changes, how it affects the different markets in the rental, then obviously has an effect on the sales side of things and vice versa. So, but yeah, look, it when you're looking at it on its own merit as a segment of the property arena, it's not as fancy and as emotive as the auction clearance rates is, and nobody really wants to talk about it unless they really see a video of a real dodgy rental where they use the balcony as a room and charging some X amount of dollars for the balcony, something like that. But underneath all that, there are a lot of issues, and a lot of it comes back what we've created, what the government has created or has allowed to manifest or to breed, is a better word, to breed in society, is this budget accommodation, and the NCAT, the tribunals across Sydney are just absolutely inundated with issues with predominantly stem from private lettings or self-managed properties, and a lot of these self-managed properties, the owners not knowing what the regulations are and what they're not. But in this case, what particularly got under my skin, Martin, because it's not a self-managed property. I can, I've addressed that in that post. This particular case is a licensed individual, and I pose the question: are the fines that they got, is that enough to curb this this practice that people can go out there and be cowboys? And a lot of this is coming from this anger and frustration is coming from, and they're pushed on by the property owners onto the property managers to take this sort of action, and stupidly the licensed individuals go ahead with it, and then they cop these fines. I still don't think that the fine is big enough, but they do it because they're in desperation to keep the client happy, because in the majority of cases it's issues with tenants, and then the tenants, the landlords have just had enough, and they want to sell the property under vacant possession. But it's because it's taking upwards of 6 to 12 months to potentially kick somebody out. In a lot of cases that were across in NCAT, and we've shared on the show before, and it's a time that a lot of people aren't prepared to wait, and to go to these lengths and locking people out. I don't know the full story, I don't know the whole background. I can imagine what they did, hopefully it's not as bad as what we used to be in the wild, wild west when I started in real estate, and property managers, one particular individual, his name was Len. I won't mention his surname. He'd disconnect the mains from the house, or disconnect the water mains and take it with him, or change the locks until people paid the rent. But that hence the reason why there's been so many changes to the Residential Tenancies Act on the back of that what used to happen in order to protect the tenants, but it seems that all this pressure that the industry is facing, we're sort of reverting back And also, it's also a lack of knowledge and understanding, and the lack of training that property management teams have or don't have.
Absolutely, I think the training is a big issue. But to just on this particular case, it's worth highlighting that the trading authorities imposed a monetary penalty of $22,000 on the company and $11,000 on the particular operator. And this is all to do with reprimanded for unlawful lockout. And your question about is that enough to really make a difference? I don't think it is. I think it needs to be more, much more significant if they really want to take people to task and get the industry to wake up. These are small beer charges in the scheme of things, and unfortunately, under the surface, this is the life of a family, probably, who are actually caught in the middle of this. The regulatory processes, and particularly the penalty processes, are not sufficient, not fit for purpose, and they need to be looked at. And I'm afraid, again, this is not a subject that many people want to touch, but we touch it, and that's important. Another thing we touch in the rant here is what's happening with regard to the numbers, right? The numbers don't lie, do they, Edwin? And we've got the Sydney region domain numbers. On the 15th, there were 26,069 properties listed for sale in the Sydney region as defined by domain. Now, interestingly, go forward a week, 25,715. So there was a fall of listings, which is quite interesting. In fact, your little chart here shows that it's actually come down a little bit. Interesting. You did say last week you wondered if things would actually continue to ease, and it has.
This is what you're going to the conversation that I've been having with colleagues around Sydney is a lot of vendors that aren't achieving the prices that they would otherwise would like to achieve, or that the selling agents have told them that they would achieve. And even after readjusting their expectations, and they're not getting that desired goal, they're taking the properties off the market and they'll put it back into the rental arena. And a lot of them are homes. And why would they put them back on the rental arena? Because now, if that could in one particular conversation that I had today, the agent said, well, from before the property went on the market for sale, they were achieving $900 a week rent for the house. It went on the market for sale. They didn't get the desired outcome. They're looking at 1.8. The offers have been coming in around 1.65. They're not accepting that. They want the 1.8. So they're going to take it off the market. And guess what, Martin? The potential rent is now $1,100 to $1,200 a week.
Yeah,
And they'll
absolutely.
get it.
Well, we're seeing rental increases way above the, was it 2% over a number of
Two
years?
dollars.
Yeah,
$2
two
per week.
dollars exactly. Ridiculous. No, rents are rising significantly, actually, particularly in Sydney, to a lesser extent in Melbourne. And in fact, if you look at the Melbourne numbers, they tell a bit of a different story, right? So in the Melbourne end of things, on the 15th, 34,145 properties listed. A week later, 34,158. So there was a small increase in Melbourne. So Melbourne is not seeing a decrease. And again, it's interesting. A lot of houses, a lot of properties now being listed below what was they were previously on the market for. And interestingly, in Melbourne, Edwin, there are not so many people who are now putting those properties back into the rental sector because the fear is in Melbourne that prices are going to continue to fall. And you and I have been saying for some time, we think Melbourne is an important indicator, the old canary in the coal mine, as it were, as to what can happen when things go really wrong. I think the Melbourne property market is continuing to deteriorate despite recent articles I saw spruiking Melbourne as the place to buy because prices were much, much more accessible. No, not necessarily so.
No, and then look, as much as I'd like to pass on a lot of business to Catherine Cashmore, a lot of our clients, we've advised them, the ones that are looking at investing in Melbourne, we've been advising them for a while, and we've just been showing the numbers. Otherwise, we said don't follow the Bunnings. There's a lot of Bunnings that have gone, and I know a number of real estate agents that have been sucked in and that have gone and bought. And look, Melbourne is the petri dish of government policy, taxes, and should, if anybody's got a t-shirt that says I'm a property investor, shoot them or do whatever you want, like bash them. That's what it's become. I guess the when will that landscape change? I think we will see a change in that landscape. Maybe if the opposition take the helm at the end of the year.
Yeah,
But
the election will be a big determinative point. If the other side do get in, I suspect that we might see a bit of a change in the environment. But who knows? Both sides of politics in Melbourne are pretty.
If they, Matt, have you thought about it? If they have to do a deal with, if they have to do a deal with One Nation,
Yes.
and then we start looking at that, it could be, who knows?
Could
Like
be
I
interesting.
said, for me, Melbourne is the, as you said, the canary in the coal mine, because that will also be the indicator of what happens when you start dealing with a lot of the immigration policy, because there will be, I mean, not that the states really have a say in it, but they do influence some of it, right? But it's a lot of these policy that'll start taking changing in the change. So for me, it's that early indicator of what could potentially happen. I mean, there's a lot 2 years before the federal election, but it's as I said, that's my that's the where I'm putting my money. But Melbourne's Melbourne's it's really on the turn. If anything, we need to build a wall, build a wall, Martin, build a wall.
Well, let's go to Brisbane. Brisbane last week, 4,302 properties listed. Jump forward, 4,387, so a slight increase, which is consistent. Although, again, I noticed that prices in Brisbane now are beginning to ease back as well, which is another little factor. And if we look at the auction story, very, very low clearance rates. Louis Christopher has just come out with a 31% clearance rate ultimately for Sydney over this last week, one of the lowest ever. And I think you and I believe that auction clearance rates don't tell you very much at all, but it is quite interesting just looking at the listings. Listings are significantly down on the auction path. Clearances are even worse. So yeah, auctions not particularly flash at the moment.
No, and this is where people have really got to think hard and fast, and strategize it and monitor the campaigns. But in the most part, when you've got these sort of climates, I mean, I've been through three cycles in my career in real estate. I've been involved in it, seen it, and had all sorts of ups and downs in those three cycles, and. You really got to think carefully about your who's leading the campaign. The unfortunate thing, Martin, is that auction campaigns are really are really the biggest tool to bash the vendors to accepting a quick sale. But I think over the last 24 months, in particular, people have been more well versed and more educated in the auction campaign. I would like to say, and I would like to think that you and I have had a huge part in that, in educating people over over the course of the rants that we've been doing for 6 or so years, and the learn and in learning the real and true motivation. It's not loyalty to the client, it's loyalty to the wallet, and that's the unfortunate thing, and hence the reason this is why we have. So for me, it's not it's more of an emotional gauge than it is from both the what vendors are really looking for. But this is the time where if you are in the market if you're selling a property, or if you're looking to sell your property, this is where the strategy is what really counts. how you strategize it. And if you do go through an auction campaign, but it's also you got to have you got to have all your ducks in aligned, because it's mayhem out there. And if you think if you think it's a battlefield, just think of it as Iran 2.1, the next level.
Absolutely right. Well, nothing is going to get any easier anytime soon as well. Let's look at the rentals just briefly. In Sydney on the 15th, there were 11,936 listed, went up to 12,181 the following week. And comparing that with Melbourne, 10,975 on the 15th, 11,140 a week later. In both cases, we are seeing some of those properties now rising. But again, the rents are rising too. So it's definitely a problem for many people. And I don't think that's going to change, unfortunately. I think we're going to see significant demand for rentals. I think rents are going to continue to rise. And unfortunately, a lot of people are going to have to spend out more just to find somewhere to live. You know, housing affordability is rubbish, particularly if in the rental sector. Well, Edwin, as we come to the end of the show, you've just got a little don't throw in the towel. It's not over till it's over, right?
Well, that's right. And time's going to pass real quick. And I'm looking at it from pragmatically, Martin, because with what's happened today, a lot of business owners that I've been talking to, they're really throwing their hands up in the air. And from a business brokerage side of things, half the time is spent on just being a counselor than really assessing the value of the business and seeing who wants what, because there's a lot of people in a lot of pain. And this is where we go back to the earlier discussion, the earlier topic of the show. And this is that I don't think a lot of people understand. A lot, for sure, the current political arena don't understand business and don't understand how much private property or principal places of residence are tied up with businesses and cross-collateralized. And unfortunately, some have gone too quick, too fast in terms of spending flashy and very very expensive fit outs. That and now when I look at the business proposition, the business is not even worth half what it cost them to fit it out. I say to them, said to one party, I said, you should have given me a call before you decided to fit it out, because I would have told you then that just to offload it as is, or even would have been cheaper for you to walk away. Just hand the keys over to somebody else that wants to keep on paying the commercial rents, because that's what's killing businesses and patronage. And obviously that a lot of that is playing out even harder over in Melbourne with their legislation changes with working from home and all this sort of stuff and all this fanfare there, which is absolutely crippling Melbourne. Some of the nice roads that you'd go to Melbourne for to see and to take on the ambience of the coffee culture there. Now they're becoming ghettos, and shop after shop closed. Robbie Barwick would no doubt tell you all about that.
Indeed. Well, I do, and I think this is going to go on for some time. So, I think people need to have a sense of perspective. A chill pill, as I keep saying, is really important at the moment. And don't get swept up with all of the social media rubbish that's out there. All of those clickbait articles about property prices crashing, and there's a very important story here about methodical, structured thinking, making better decisions by taking a bit more time, because I don't think at the moment being bounced into quick decisions makes any sense. Edwin, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you so much for your Tuesday evening rant. Hopefully we'll be back to Monday next week. Don't lock yourself out again. And I hope you have a good day the rest of the week anyway.
Thank you, Martin. All the very best to you too. Cheers.
Okay, see ya.